Wizard of Whiskey presents Swig and Ramble, a podcast for the modern age. Come for the whiskey, stay for the shit show. Introducing Justin Curry at Wizard of Whiskey, Julia Men at the Wee Tipple. And now, pour yourself a drink and enjoy the show. I know I will.
Welcome back, Ramblers!
Yay!
That felt so fucking cool.
Nice.
We have a breathtaking show for you today, and I cannot wait to get started. Of course, I am Julia Men, and with me, as ever, is the elegant, the majestic, the bearded, and glassed?
Glassed? No. I don't think that's a word.
Glasses wearing. I wear glasses too. Sure. Justin Curry. And we are so excited to welcome Sharon and Rebecca Rosenberg. Sharon is the winemaker at Breathless Wines, and Rebecca is the author of Champagne Widows, among other novels. And we are going to be drinking this wine and discussing this book today. So welcome to the show, ladies. We are so excited to have you.
Cheers. Cool. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
You did a great job popping that bottle, too. Only a sigh. It was beautiful.
Mine, I had to make it a little louder just for the mic, but yeah.
Yeah. Mine exploded, which is why I was like, oh yeah, great. Thanks for coming on. It's so funny how this whole thing came about, and I'm thrilled that it did. So thank you both for taking the time to come and talk to us. And I'm certain that all three listeners are really gonna appreciate this this podcast. So Who wants to kick this off? Should we
well,
have the illustrious author or the amazing winemaker to start us off?
Well, I feel like we should give them a little demonstration of how to do what's in your glass and what sours are mashed, because I just met these lovely ladies, and they don't seem very much like complainers to me. So I feel like we should give them a little bit of a crash course on how to rant about stuff that makes them angry. But first, wait, there's more. I am drinking the Méthode Champenois Breathless Brut. So it is a sparkling wine out of Healdsburg made by the illustrious Sharon. Cheers to you. And that is what you heard me popping open at the beginning of this episode. And I got to tell you, the nose on this is glorious. You get that rich baked orchard fruit, really ripe apples. You get that toasty brioche. Like there are layers upon layers of notes in this. And I'm just going to dive right into sip it because I don't want to keep smelling it anymore.
Julia, you're drinking the Brut. And I think Justin is drinking that as well. Is that right, Justin?
I actually picked up a couple of extra bottles while I was at the winery. So I'm drinking a half bottle of the sparkling rosé.
Oh, well, that is the exciting news of the moment. So Sharon, I'm going to turn it over to you to tell us what you're drinking.
Well, first I wanted to say about the opening of the bottle, beautiful job. And we have a friend here that owns a champagne shop, called Sai, and the reason she named it that was because it is the sound of a contented woman.
Ooh,
so cheers hello. To that.
Cheers to that.
I love that. I've been to Sai plenty of times and never heard that story, so I love that.
Yeah, I've not heard that explanation either, but I appreciate it. And there she goes, my cat Vesper just stole the cage of the bubbly and is now.
She has a new toy.
Yep. She's like, ooh, something shiny. The flavor on this is spectacular. It dances on your tongue. It has this very finessed mousse. It is just alive in the glass, and it has really rich tones of all of those notes I was talking about and more. So
look at the tiny bubbles.
Yeah.
That's what I love about Breathless. Such tiny, beautiful bubbles.
They are really, really small and delightful. And you all should try this. So throwing it over to Sharon. Oh, wait, I didn't do what sours my mash yet. What sours my mash these days? Night sweats. It's so cold. It got down into the 30s, and so I was bundled in like 6 different layers of blankets and sheets, and it should be nice and toasty warm, which I think was the problem. It was a little too toasty, and then I get night sweats, and I kick everything off, and I'm still asleep, and then it gets too cold, and I'm sweating and shivering. It's the worst. I hate it so much, and I cannot figure out how to stop that from happening. So, listeners, if you're out there and you have this figured out, please help a gal out, because I got nothing. It just makes me so angry. And then we have to do laundry way more often. I have to clean all my pajama shirts way more often. It's just a hassle. So, Sharon, over to you. What's in your glass and what sours your mash today?
Well, cheers. Because we have something different, I just wanted to let you know what is in your glass. So we use a beautiful Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and some Pinot Meunier in that brut that you're having right now. So the Pinot Meunier is one of the top three grapes. Actually, all three of those are the top three grapes that they use in Champagne. And we figure they know what they're doing with everything you're going to hear from Rebecca. You know, they've been doing it a very, very long time. And so we tend to go back to everything they've started doing and following suit. So you were drinking a brut. I'm drinking the rosé. And the reason I am is we just won the sweepstakes in the Sonoma County Harvest wine competition. So it's a big honor in this area. We are so thrilled. And I guess I can go into my rant that unfortunately we have gotten so many orders. I am having to go to the top of the top to get more made because we're.
Now, like Sharon, you will be sending my case, right?
Of course, of course.
Okay.
Oh, I will make more. I will make more, but you know, I'm having to pull some strings, and I'm going to owe a lot of people. All good.
Always good, very exciting.
That's certainly a good problem to have. So,
that's really great.
What's in your glass and what sours your mash today, Rebecca?
Well, I don't know if everyone knows that champagne and sparkling wine are different flavors, actually. And so you're drinking the Brut, and the Brut, as Sharon told you, is the three different grapes that they make champagne in Champagne. And then Sharon's drinking the Rosé. And what is that breakdown? Is that the same breakdown, Sharon?
There's no Pinot Meunier in this one.
No Pinot Meunier, which is really the smallest amount that usually is added, but it has a beautiful flavor. In fact, Breathless even makes a Pinot Meunier champagne, which is great, or a sparkling wine. And that is super unusual. So I am drinking my favorite fall sparkling, and that is Blanc de Noirs. And that is made mostly from Pinot Noir grapes. And so it's really yummy for me in the fall because that has more body and flavor. And it just is fall-like to me. And then, of course, Breathless also does a Blanc de Blanc, which is all Chardonnay. So you can really, I think that's one exciting thing to do for, say, World Champagne Day is try the different flavors of sparkling wine made in the method Champenois. Have you tried all of those, Julia?
Not from Breathless. Yes, I have tried all those various iterations. I have never had an all Pinot Meunier sparkling or champagne. I would love to try that. That sounds amazing and right up my alley. So if I ever come across one,
Sharon and I did a trip with members from Breathless. We led a trip last year through Champagne, and we discovered that they were doing a Meunier only champagne. And so then she got right on that.
Yeah.
Right on fantastic. That. Started it. Very exciting.
Justin, you got to taste that, right?
I did, and I picked up a bottle because I love 100% Pinot Meunier. I don't think it gets the respect that it deserves. Mm. You know, everyone's all about, oh, it's Chardonnay and Pinot Noir and this and that. And then, you know, it's the same way that Colombard and Cognac doesn't get the respect that it needs, but on its own, it's very nice. Yeah. So I picked up a bottle, and I did pick up a bottle of the Blanc de Noir as well. So very, very pleased with that. Before I go off on my rant and what's in my glass, Rebecca, can you tell us what sour is your mash today?
Sure, absolutely. So this is so funny because I really live in the vineyards. Oh. And so people think it's very romantic to live here in the vineyards, and it is. It's spectacular. I'm looking at all the vineyards right now. But the funny thing that happens during harvest is unbelievable. I was walking the dogs this morning, and it was early, like 6:30. It's dark, and there are still trucks, giant grape trucks rumbling up the road beside me, and the entire vineyard is lit with stadium lights. It's like unbelievable. And I hear this Italian opera being sung at the top of their lungs. And I'm saying, where am I really? This is just unbelievable. And what's really funny is we get city folks coming up, and they're a little miffed that the tractors are in the roads. And everybody turns into kind of an armchair weather caster, because we're all like biting our nails for our friends like Sharon. I have Sharon to think of, and my other winery friends, like, how is the grape harvest? And you're always obsessed with, is the weather right for the grape harvest? Everyone's worried about wind. We're worried about the sun, the temperature, and whether it's going to rain at the wrong time, because it'll ruin the entire harvest. And your friends are going to be depressed for the rest of the year. So that is my thing. And then I feel, how about let's give some love to those winery, to the vineyard workers.
Oh, yep.
Oh, who Absolutely. Are working through the night, and they're battling bats and fruit flies and stray grapevine branches, you know, getting all scratched up. And then we complain of that a bottle of sparkling at Breathless, say, costs $35 or $40. It's like, what are you, crazy? And it hasn't even been made yet. So I think that they deserve a year of wine, of whatever they're picking. They should get a year's supply. So that's my rant.
Cheers. I love that. Side rant. On her rant, my wife asked, we had a couple of 100-degree days the other week, and we were outside, and we have an apple tree, and my wife asked me, why don't you pick the apples now? And I said, I can't pick them when they're this hot. You have to pick them at night, or you have to pick them when it's cooler. You can't pick them when they're hot. Not that we're fermenting them or doing anything with them other than eating them, mind you. But I still have that mindset of, no, you can't pick these. You know, it's not many. I think last year we had like 100 and something pounds of apples, which is 97 pounds more than we would ever eat in a year.
Well, you know where to send those apples, Justin.
Yes, I do. I am strongly considering doing a brandy or something, because we have three apple trees, a pear tree, a quince tree, and now we're doing some citrus and some other stuff, and we're discovering trees all the time. I just froze a bunch of peaches, because we harvested them. We don't know what to do with them yet. So we're like, okay, we're just going to freeze them and save them. Anyway, that is great. People who live in wine country, the locals, so to speak. It's tough, because you have the tourists, and you have the people who go up to Napa for their experience or their honeymoon or their whatever. And we forget that we live in these areas that people actually come to. I forget when I'm in the city, you know, San Francisco, I forget people actually think of it as a major city to visit. Internationally, even, you know, but tourists are always the worst. So I won't complain about tourists and traffic today. I will complain. A lot of us have pets. A lot of our listeners have pets. We don't see our Teddy. We don't see him as a dog. You know, he's a baby. My question is this: he's like not even a foot tall. He's a Menpin Chihuahua blend mix type of thing, chip weenie, whatever it's called. He does not have a job. And yet,
freeloading bastard.
He is. Where do these dogs get off? And I use the word dog in general, get off snoring like they're a fucking dock worker
There you go.
Are you kidding me right now? He sleeps like this on his back under a blanket, like a person.
Oh.
Totally fine. Takes up our entire king size bed. Don't know how that's even possible. Like physically, not even sure how the math works.
Yeah, if somehow your dog does is it. Smaller than my cat's.
Yeah, and snores like he just came off of a 21-hour shift. Like, what are you doing during your day? I see you. What you're doing? You're in bed all day. He's under the covers for a little bit. He gets out under the covers and he's like, okay, that's too hot. He hangs out. He sleeps. He's not a dock worker. He's not, you're not a longshoreman. He's actually right there next to me. You're not a longshoreman. Why are you snoring? And speaking of sighing, what? Who thought these pets had a sigh? Why are they exacerbated? What are they?
Oh, yeah. Especially dogs. Bud does the sighs that can come out of his chunky little body. Like, dude, you've been sleeping for 18 plus hours. It's really that much of a burden to you to be part of this family?
Seriously, you do not have to pay the bills. You're not sitting there making, you know, those hard, you know, kitchen table decisions trying to figure out how to pay the mortgage. Why are you sighing? Anyway, I skipped my what's in my glass. I am, of course, drinking the Breathless, I believe it's the Brut Rosé, correct me if I'm wrong. The bottle just says Rosé, but I believe it is the Brut Rosé. It is spectacular. Bubbles are great. Color is great. mouthfeel is great. Sort of that raspberry brioche, a little bit of scone. Very nice nose. I'm not a huge sparkling rosé fan. I'm becoming one because of this project that we're doing where we're just constantly tasting sparkling wines. But this is tremendous. And it has a very nice finish. And I'm sorry, I don't feel like I'm bastardizing your wine, but I like to pair things with weird things. So I'm gonna have some cheese crackers with this.
Are you gonna have Cheez-Its or something? Yeah.
Cheez-Its, exactly. I'm gonna have those. Not that they're sponsoring this episode. This episode.
Okay, well, that's good. Usually Sharon will have some beautiful salty potato chips. Ooh, preferably with the caviar.
Oh.
Creme fraiche and caviar. And you've got it. You're done.
Yeah. Well, I have a side rant in your side rant, please. If I can, Justin. I have fruit trees also, all the ones that you mentioned. And they were growing massive fruit. They were so gorgeous. And I was waiting till my daughter came home so we could pick them together and have this memory. And I walked her out to the fruit trees and all of the fruit was gone because the raccoons ate it. I guess it was either raccoons or skunks or coyotes or somebody. They ate every last apple and plum and pluot and everything.
No.
Yeah. She said, are you sure there was fruit in these trees? So.
Oh no. Yeah, that's my gardening challenge for next year. Not that I have to do with I mean, we have raccoons and possums and stuff, but they don't really, knock on wood, terrorize my garden. But that's my plan for next year, is learn about pest management in the garden, because, oh my god, the bugs are so tiny! So tiny! And
yeah.
you have to really get all up in there to even try and see them, and the various caterpillars and beetles and slugs and all that jazz.
So it's impossible. Just give up.
Farmer's Market. Farmer's Market is my place.
Yeah. Sharon says you're going to go to the market and get the good stuff.
Well, yeah, that's also true.
Yeah.
But ladies, we have so much to talk about. I'm so excited to have you both here. But let's get a little bit of background on you both first. So give us a brief overview of who you both are, what you do, and how you got into what you do. And either of you can go first.
Go ahead, Sharon.
No, you.
First of all, Sharon and I have been friends for so long that we probably shouldn't even say, like 25 years or more. And we met at doing a project for the kids that don't have parents here in Sonoma County due to some terrible issue. Like maybe they were drug dealers or something terrible like that. So we started doing these monthly projects that turned into weekly projects at the children's home here. And we became really good friends. And our group was called the Cha-Chas because it was the children's home auxiliary. So we have been longtime friends, and we discovered that we loved sparkling wine, and we had plenty of it. And at that time, Sharon was actually owned beautiful spas. And so I didn't have any clue that she would end up owning a winery, and she'll tell that story. But I just am an enthusiast, an extravagant enthusiast of sparkling wine. I've always loved it. And I started traveling to Champagne and understanding how exciting that was, and discovering that there were women behind a lot of these champagnes, very few of them, and that they were called something like Champagne Widows. And we'll get into that later. But why were they widows? And who were they? And it was the 1800s. And what was it like? So I just got honestly obsessed with finding out who these women were and started writing books about them. And I had been writing books for a while, but once I hit on them, that's really all I wanted to do. And then Sharon, we'll turn it over to you, tell your story, which is amazing.
Well, first I want to say is the research that you've done is amazing. She's been over to Champagne how many times now?
I think six, and we're going again next year. Yes. You and I and a group of 30 people.
Yeah, we are. Can't wait. Well, I grew up in Sonoma County, pretty close to where Rebecca lives now. I might mention that today is a red flag day for the fires, and it's super windy, dry. We've had a little tiny bit of rain, but...
Oh my God, Sharon, I realized that it was it 7 years ago?
Yeah.
So 7 years ago, we lost 6,000 homes here in Sonoma County. Thanks. 7 years ago today. And wow. We lost our whole farm here. So
beautiful.
And everyone, farm. A lot of people. So go ahead. Sorry. Yeah. I didn't realize that.
A beautiful lavender farm. Oh my gosh. So anyway, that was a little rant about the vineyards. That's one other thing that we have to worry about here.
Mm. That's true. Fires all the time.
Yeah. But not when I was growing up so much. It was like the ideal life. I had two sisters, and we all stayed here, and basically, Breathless started because we wanted to do something in honor of our mom. She was an amazing woman. She did philanthropy. She was a teacher, as was my dad. So being involved in the community and the children just was always in the forefront for us. So finding a way to do that through a business and through a passion that you love was how Breathless came to be. So the three of us decided to start a sparkling wine business. We'd all been in the wine business before. I was married to Bruce Cohn of BR Cohn Winery in Glen Ellen. We did big reds. We actually started with a sparkling wine. Helen Turley was our winemaker, and she made a wine called Platinum because he managed the Doobie Brothers. So it was all about the platinum records on the wall and that kind of thing. So really fun and spectacular wine. Helen Turley made it. So, you know, everything she touches goes to gold. So I always wanted to do that again. And the opportunity came up to do that with my sisters. My sister Rebecca started Rack and Riddle, which is a custom crush sparkling wine facility. So we were able to grab our winemaker, Penny Gag-Coster. We do a lot of the dosing and all of that part, but she really lays down the base wines and knows all the vineyards and which part of which vineyard is going to be the best. A lot like they do in Champagne, because I mean, even there, some families, they just own one row of these beautiful grapes, you know? And that's how she looks at these grapes as she walks through every vineyard. It's just beautiful. So we decided to do this in honor of Mom, really for all the breathless moments she created in our lives and to remind everyone to create those in their own. We really feel like sparkling wine is all about gathering, bringing people together, celebrating. It's just a little bit more fun in your glass. And so that's where we just, that's the journey that we decided to take. And so right now we have 15 different sparkling wines, different flavors, single vineyards, and varietals like the Pinot Meunier. So it's just, it's a passion. It's so much fun. And we love to give back. We are the sparkling wine sponsors of the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts, which also Rebecca's husband is a board member. So we're very intertwined. But
we have a lot in common.
So our sparkling wine is there for all their performances. It's a lot like Beer Cone Winery used to be, because we used to do these concerts with, you know, all these different bands, and so much fun. And that's what they do there. And they really bring the community together to raise funds for the children and all the arts. And they just bring that because these kids have never had the opportunity. And so it's really a unique center I love.
Oh, awesome. I love how intertwined, as the great word, so intertwined your lives, and you are very much still on that path. I couldn't help but notice the artwork on the cover of Champagne Widows is the label on your Breathless Brew.
Amazing coincidence, isn't it?
Gee, how did that happen? Do tell.
How did that happen? Actually, I showed Sharon the covers that I was considering, and she had read the book, and she said, you know what? I think you need something more explosive and more exciting. And so she offered to have me use the artwork from their labels. And that is a very special piece, because it's actually a champagne art from that era. So it's very authentic and very beautiful, and really defines a woman popping out of the cork, riding a cork into space.
And the reason we chose her was because we wanted to go wherever she was going.
Nice. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Having fun.
Yeah. That is what we like to do. We take our sparkling wine very seriously, but it is all about fun. If you came to our tasting room, you'd see our Vespa with a sidecar.
Oh, nice.
We show people how to savor their bottle so they can enjoy it here. It's fun.
You just had this amazing French fair at your winery that I love so much. People were just enjoying that so much.
It was a perfect day, and they unloaded a container full of French antiques and flowers and lavender products. And yeah, I wanted to stay like that every day.
Well, we've talked champagne, we've talked sparkling wine, we've talked breathless. What do you say we talk about a book? I mean, probably the Champagne Widows book, because it's the one we all have.
Maybe, yeah. It's the one I just finished reading, and I felt like my head had exploded from like, oh my God, all of these things happened to her.
Julia, did you get that? Did you get that? That, can you believe that all that was going on and that she went through what she did?
The tenacity of this woman blazing her own trail. I'm like, that, wow, if that is not inspirational. But I feel like I'm getting ahead of myself. Why don't you give us a brief overview of what Champagne Widows is about? And also,
I liked what you were saying, because that's why I was moved to write about her first. First of all, it is 1800 and she is 24 years old. And she is actually a pretty wealthy woman. Did you get that? She's a wealthy woman. Her father owns a wool factory of 1,000 employees, and he's the mayor of the town. And all her parents want is for her to get married to some rich guy and, you know, enjoy life. Yeah. So probably a vineyard or maybe a, oh, the pig farmer. Yes, the pig. They want her to marry the pig farmer and be happy. And she has nothing to do with it. And I did not make up any of this story. None of this story is made up. I just brought it to life. And that's why I just adore her, because she was born with a gift or a curse called Lene, the nose. And so she had this extraordinary sense of smell. And that made her a very funny person. If you can think about living in the 1800s and you have this horribly extraordinary sense of smell, and you're having to smell the horse manure and the garbage being thrown out into the streets and the urine and the factories belching and all of the things that were happening then. So she becomes very particular and very persnickety, and she fights with her mother all the time. So you've got a very engaging personality, and somehow she is not going to marry that pig farmer. She's going to marry her childhood friend instead, even though he has some idiosyncrasies. And so it turns out that his idiosyncrasies, as they got married, they got worse and worse. As she's trying to create this winery, he's getting worse and worse with his real mental illness, and he really couldn't handle it. So we won't tell you everything that happens in that, but I really felt for her.
Well, also, I don't think we actually named who this woman is we're talking about. Who is this?
Thank you. Well, this is Barbara Nicole Clicquot. And her original name before she got married was Barbara Nicole Ponsardon. And then she married Francois Clicquot. And both of their fathers were very rich, and they were both wool merchants, and they happened to own tons of vineyards. And they weren't really focused on the vineyards. They were focused on the sheep. And she wanted to take all this riches of land and the vineyards and do something with it. But she had one big opponent. Who was that, Julia? Or Justin?
Like, there were a lot of opponents. No one wanted her to succeed.
Yeah.
All of these men were trying to use her, trying to put her down, trying to sexualize or marry her. She had a lot of people putting her down.
He did.
But also, you know, Napoleon was a pretty big part.
Yeah, so this is the thing that shocked me when I wrote it. I would never write a book about war because I just am not interested. But I realized that I had to write something about these 15 years of Napoleon wars that she had to brave while she's trying to create champagne, because he's her number one antagonist. So I had to include Napoleon, and I didn't want to. And that's why I handled him the way that I did, almost as a fairy tale. I don't know if you got that.
Yeah, it was very interesting, and I wasn't sure how much was elaborated or how much was like your view of that, especially with the red man and all of that, but it definitely is stylistically different than Clicquot's portions of the books.
Well, I did do that on purpose because it is handled in just like a page, a very short little segment about Napoleon, because again, I wasn't interested in telling a story about his wars. I was interested in telling about her. And yet as the reader, you have to understand what was going on. You know, it's as if we had war for 15 years here in America, and then we're trying to, you know, do what we do best, and that you keep being thwarted by Napoleon.
Yeah.
And it could happen here.
And starting a business in and of itself is fraught with pitfalls. And I'm sure Sharon could tell us all about that. Wineries. And as she was talking about being concerned about the weather for the harvest, and you have the fires, and is it going to rain? How cold is it going to get? These were the same things people were worried about their vineyards 200 years ago. And that really stuck out to me. Also, when Clicquot was talking about her wanting to learn about wine, and yeah, she was able to pick out the scents, but learn, oh, the toasting of the barrels matters, and the different grapes matter, and the terroir. And I'm like, I remember asking all of these questions when I was first learning about wine. Like, how universal is that? It was so amazing to me.
I loved going through those basic tenets of, you know, what it takes to make wine. And I love when people that don't drink wine are really interested in that, because I've gotten a lot of feedback that, wow, that's very interesting. Had no idea that all that goes into making wine. But I just, again, loved how she beat, how she worked to work around Napoleon and actually committed treason to do it, because she gets that, she gets an American ship and she disguises her wine as chocolate and as tobacco and coffee in this ship in order to get it past all of Napoleon's blockades in this war. So that was fun. And by the way, the Red Man exists. He's real. The Red Man. So the Red Man is someone who sits on Napoleon's shoulder. You'll have to read the book to understand, but I think he was invented by the journalists of the time to explain how Napoleon could be so evil when he started out as a good guy. In fact, when you go to Paris, he is still a hero. He has the Invalids, a beautiful monument to him, a beautiful building. They have his body in a casket. And he's a hero because he was part of the revolution. But then he did all these wars that actually killed tens of thousands of French men, which is why the book is called Champagne Widows, not just Barbara Nicole, but also all these widows who were left without husbands. And it actually gave them a freedom, like Barbara Nicole taught them how to work with the wine and how to harvest and how to make the wine. And so,
and she learned from a war widow.
Yes, so she did.
I forget her name, but she was in charge of the vineyards and oversaw all of.
And that's a true workers. That's a true story. That's straight from the historian. So a lovely thing that I'm able to do is work with the historians from these wineries and get anything, glean any information that they had. Like, how did she learn this? Because the men weren't really going to teach her everything. Well, you know, we roll our eyes now, but then it was impossible. Today it might be difficult. Then it was absolutely impossible. And how about this? It was illegal for a woman to own a business. So she had to work it around.
I will tangent time. I hope everyone's okay with this, but and it's funny you say, you know, you didn't want to write about war. I happen to be this, I think war buff is probably an outdated term, but following the history of humanity is honestly following where the wars were. You know, if you look at the papal wars, humanity lost, obviously, it always loses in war, but you gain things like distillation going to Europe, different wine and perfume making techniques leaving, you know, the Middle East and going into these areas. The time of you know, Michelangelo and Caravaggio were the time of the Medicis, you know, who were constantly at war. And, you know, you look at these times and you think about, okay, yes, the United States was in a war for almost 20 years, and all of the dot-coms, all of the Google grew, Yahoo went down, all of these things that happened over those years where the economy changed and shifted and all these other things. It is very interesting. One of the things And I will talk about the book in just a moment. I do have some really cool passages that really spoke to me. It's interesting that in 1988, in fact, on October 25th, World Champagne Day, in 1988, the Women's Business Act was passed for the first time in United States history, allowing women the right to own a business. And it took me forever to wrap my head around this.
Justin, in America?
1988, in the United States.
Wow. I'm writing that down.
They could technically do it in states, but they couldn't do it at the federal level, or it wasn't federally, you know, legal. So it's a very interesting time here, even in the States. One of the things we love to talk about on the show, not love to, but we have to, we feel like we have to, is women's rights and women being such big parts of the hospitality industry. Because we're a whiskey show. We started off as a whiskey show, but it's evolved to be a hospitality show. Where we talk about all of these things, because Julia and I have this very similar background. I from the culinary side and her from the world traveling and the wine side. So,
and the lady side.
The lady side. I unfortunately bring nothing to that side, except for my wife, who constantly puts me in my place and tells me, she had to teach me things about my career history and my career path. I thought it was normal, the abuse that I had gone through in that, you know, my years in the kitchen was normal. I thought everyone went through that in some form or another. But we won't get into that on this episode today. In chapter 15, when you talk about the chef de cuisine at Versailles would allow you to do, you know, prepare the dishes for the servants. And it's amazing how in the 17 and 1800s, 16 through like the mid 1800s in the United States, lobster was thrown away or given to slaves. And it's interesting that my mind goes to that. And it's funny that, not funny, but interesting that the servants were fed beef bourguignon, cassoulet, onion soup. And you mentioned these are the dishes to sustain the soul. And they really are. It's the peasant food, and I hate to use that term, but it was the peasant food that we, ratatouille, things like that, today, that we strive to create. Those things that wasn't what Henry VIII or any of the 29 Louis that there were, you know, what they were eating. It's what the peasants were eating that we now strive to recreate and nurture our souls. I think it's wasn't there a book series, the chicken soup for the soul type of, yeah. So I love that line. And I think that it spoke to me very, the whole book did, but what this woman went through to become what we consider now today, a brand. Beautiful, beautiful story, beautifully written. And what I really like about the book, the action really doesn't get started until the first page. And it just goes from there. Just like, you open it and you're off to the races. You're like, oh shit, we're in this.
Yeah.
I could picture myself.
I have a habit of that. Why not start the story?
Of course. I can picture myself walking down the stone steps and my wife looks over to me like, no, you're not building another cave for the wine. You know, she's like, no, don't, you know, because we have a hill in our backyard. And I'm like, I could dig it out and put a cave.
Hey, Justin, have you ever been down in the Crières of Veuve Clicquot?
No, I have not.
So that, seeing those Crières, which Sharon and I have done a few times now, they are just awe-inspiring and so exciting. And there are hundreds and hundreds of kilometers of these Crières that are built under Rhône. So that makes it magical in itself. They were already there. The Romans excavated them and they were already part of their history. So it's exciting.
That's incredible. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but we tend to, I think whitewash might be a weird term, but we tend to whitewash that and we give a very sterilized version of what a cellar looks like. Here's a lot of love to Napa. Love you guys. You know, don't forget about me. Don't be mad. But you walk into some of these cellars in Napa, and it's just this amazing, beautiful white slab concrete with these perfectly formed barrels that have never been dirty, that have never been soiled with anything, these pristine floors, pristine bottles, and everything is perfect. A real cellar is, you're falling down steps if you're not paying attention, because yes, there's nothing that's even, there's nothing that's yeah, you know, built well. It was built by a slave 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And you pay attention with the damn lamp or you're going to fall. And it's, nothing's level, nothing's square. Bottles are dirty, dusty, and they've been there for 600 years.
Have mold growing on them. Sharon,
exactly,
what
mold
was
growing
that
on them. You're trying to riddle the body.
That amazing, Sharon, what was that amazing winery that you arranged our tour of? And I was appalled, you know, with my American sensibilities. It's appalled at what everything looked like, because this is
black and
it was black and like an inch of mold and everything. Yeah. What was that one?
I can't even remember right now, but I just, you know what hit me so much about the caves were the people that it protected during the wars. I mean, this wasn't just used for wine. It was used for people to survive during those wars, and their names and things are carved in the walls. You know, there's nothing pristine. There's history. It's all about history.
Oh yeah. And even in World War II, like right now I'm writing about Bollinger, and it's all World War II. They were hiding in the caves from the Germans.
Yeah. I was in Champaign for like a day. I didn't go to any of the big houses, but I went into one or two small family producers, but it was actually down in Marceau that I saw their caves that were built back in the 1400s, and they weren't quite as extensive as Clicquot. They were only 7 kilometers underneath Burgundy, but it was walking through history. You had bottles down there that were 50, 75 years old. They had crystals and mushrooms growing on them, mm-hmm. and it was something I will never forget. It was so cool.
And I want to clarify, there are two, in case anyone goes to France and they go to Champagne, there are two different words we're talking here, caves and crieres. So a crier is what was dug by the Romans underneath the whole city. And what they were doing is excavating the chalk. They thought it was going to be good building materials and for medicines and all of that. And so those exist all under this beautiful city, which is really the Champagne capital of Rhône. And then caves, other wineries built, if they don't have crieres under them, then they're going to build the wine caves, and they're going to be a little more constructed. Yeah.
Modern in the 1400s, 1500s. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
You know, yes. Yeah. it is incredible that, sad and incredible at the same time, that unfortunately these things existed because of war. We wouldn't have Burgundy, Romani Conti, and some of these other, you know, regions had the Romans not invaded every single place that they could see on the map or they could get to. So it is sad, but it's also our humanity, which you can't really correct it at this point. It's a little past the time to make it right, but we can learn from it. Complete side rant, not a political show, not a discussion we need to get into, but it is nice to see people discussing that history and understanding where these things came from and these recipes. And we were talking about this the other day, talking about why the food of a culture is tied with its production of whatever it drinks. I really kind of want more Cheez-Its with this wine. I have candy corn on my desk, but I'm not going to do that to this wine.
Gross. You shouldn't do that to yourself, Justin. Have some
salt. I should. My wife said the same thing.
So Sharon, what would you put with the rosé?
Yes.
I'm sure it wouldn't be Cheez-Its. What would it be?
You know, and I'll go with Penny, because Penny and I talk about that, because she makes all her wine to go with food. But she says barbecue, mm-hmm. and the other one is actually turkey for Thanksgiving. Like,
oh,
it is the best pairing that there is for a sparkling wine. right there with the turkey.
And Sharon, what is the breakdown of the grapes on that rosé?
Yes, please.
Oh, thank you, Ethan. The breakdown on the rosé of the grapes.
Yes. Oh, she's calling in the question.
Call a friend.
It's 72% Pinot Noir.
72 Pinot Noir.
24 Chard.
24 Chard.
2 Meunier, 2 Pinot Gris.
2 Meunier and 2 Pinot Gris.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ethan.
Joining us from Sonoma.
I thought it was more Pinot Noir, so it's so delicious. Yum.
It's a very nice base wine, yeah. And different, very different, you know.
Justin, you should send me some. I want.
We'll see how it goes. I may take it off for myself.
I want to add one thing before we leave Veuve Clicquot. She invented sparkling rosé.
Really?
Did she? Did you talk about that in the book, or maybe I missed it?
No, I do not, because it happened after the book. In fact, today, knowing I was talking to you, I was thinking, geez, I almost could do another book after the wars ended.
I know.
1915, but I have too many other champagne widows to write about before I go back and write another book. But I mean, she lived until she was 89.
Oh, good on her.
And I leave her like when she's in her 30s. So there's another whole story. But she invented rosé, which is really cool. But more than that, she invented the riddling racks, which that process made, and you saw what happened in the book. So back in the day, they were drinking champagne and it was totally murky and cloudy and gross. And all that dead yeast would form like little snakes in the glass. And who wants to drink that? And she invented the riddling racks, and that she actually invented them after the book also, although I allude to it.
Yeah.
So the riddling racks hold the bottles at an angle so that all the dead yeast falls to the neck, and that you could freeze that and get it out. And she created the clear, beautiful champagne that we have today. And I thank her.
That's fantastic. Go ahead, Jen.
I was just going to say, it goes along with the food, because at the beginning, when they saw this second fermentation happening in the bottle, they were like, oh my God, something's gone way wrong. And they would give it away to the paupers, you know? And so it went from being, this is bad, this is wrong, to the kings and the czars going, this is what I want.
That's often with what happens in food. We look at, you know, the various cuisines that we consume now. They were peasant foods or throwaways from in the ancient times, but kind of getting back to that cave, question. It's always funny. You can tell the bottles that have been riddled from the fact that they've been turned just a little bit. And to me, it always seemed incredibly tedious, where you're like, okay, I have to go and I have to, you know, certain number of degrees and that's it. And you just, now you walk away and I'm like, finish the whole thing. What are you doing? And then, oh, no, I'm going to come back next year. I'm like, what? It's insane that the system still today, you know, hasn't really changed since what, 18, you know, 10, 18, 15, around that time, these things became popular. So the book is a great example of what people went through during the Napoleonic Wars and then subsequently. It's a great history, even though it's a novelization. It's a great book to read, and I would recommend it to anyone who is interested in learning about the extraordinary women behind champagne. So
thank you, Justin.
And we are looking forward. I believe we're doing this again in a couple of weeks for Next. World Champagne Day. We're doing a Zoom call. So those who are listening, check out the websites and all that stuff for links. If you want to join that, you'll have to buy the wine and the book, but we definitely encourage that. So thank you both so much for coming on and taking the time. Before I exit, Julia, you had a bunch of other stuff, didn't you? Or was that everything?
Oh, sure. No, I mean, I just like talking about the book and digging into it. I could go very niche, but that would probably spoil some of the book for people that aren't going to know what's going to come up. So I think maybe I'll save that for the book club discussion. But we did touch
I'm excited that Sharon's going to be with us too. And that has been very special to be part of her journey, seeing her journey with her sisters. And I have to say, I'm very inspired to write about these women, and that really has a little piece to do with her and her sisters putting together this massive award-winning winery, Breathless.
Yeah.
Good job,
well.
Girl.
Love the history. It's amazing. And we even did a Breathless getaway over to Champaign, and it was all about walking the walk of the women and the widows of Champaign, and learn so much. And you just get so connected to why you're doing it. That's great.
When is this trip, and why have I not received my invitation for next year?
Yeah. Well, how about, are there any places left, Sharon?
There are.
Oh.
There are. I think we have 10 rooms left.
Sign me up.
It's well, actually gonna... with AMA Waterways, and we're starting with a trip through the Rhine, on the Rhine River in Germany. So we'll be exploring those beautiful sparkling houses.
Here, yeah.
Yeah, a little different. And then we're going on to Champaign.
Okay.
Sharon, where can folks find your wines? Are you distributed in different states? Do you ship to consumers? Where can people find you? And on social media, where can people find and follow you?
Pretty limited. Right now we're in Florida with a distributor. We just landed in Vegas and Northern Nevada as well. We are in California, and we do all direct there, but really the best place to get, you know, all of the choices of the 15 different sparkling wines is through the tasting room. Otherwise they're just buying one or two SKUs, and that's
what about the website?
Right. Breathless. Yeah. The tasting room and the website.
I mean, the number one place to buy it is the website, because you could order anything.
Yes, you
right?
can. Yes, you absolutely can.
Breathlesswines.com.
This is your agent right here. Rebecca, you're hired.
We'd be happy to put the cruise, it sounds like, on the website, on our social media when we put everything, because we'll put all the links out. So we'd be happy to share that out as well, so people can, maybe one of our fans or can join. We'd love that to happen. What about this book? Where can we find it? Where can we buy it?
The easiest place to buy it is on Amazon, as is everything else in the world.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Or the tasting room.
If you're from California, you can go to the tasting room. You're like my number one customer on these books.
And we have a gift box with the wine and the book.
That's the best thing, you guys. They do the Breathless and the book, and that's really fun. And then other than that, my website is rebecca-rosenberg.com, and I'm on Instagram and Facebook, also under Rebecca Rosenberg Novelist. So you can find me those ways too. And this has been so much fun.
It's been a delight to have you both.
It has been. We're just scratching the surface. I'm pretty sure I have another book from you. And so we're going to have you guys on again in the new year. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to be drinking a lot of sparkling wine over the next 15 months. Thrilled to be doing that. So Julia, do you want to bring us home?
I feel like I did the intro. You should bring us home.
I will bring us home. All right. Well, that wraps everything up, Ramblers. Join us next time when we talk to those people who only want to drink still wine.
Oh, fighting words.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Download almost anywhere. Join our Facebook group and follow us at Swig and Ramble on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and Twitter for more fermented fuckery. Cheers.